from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, rolling along with Seth Payne. And all of this talk from the NFL agents about how well the Texans are doing and how well run they are these days, which is, again, very different from how they were discussed not too long ago, got me thinking about Nick Caserio's draft classes. It also might have been being around some of these guys yesterday or last night at the Texan season premiere, you know, seeing Brevin Jordan work the red carpet, you know, kind of be that guy that interviews his teammates and other celebrities, because he's kind of got that personality. Of course, Nico Collins there holding court. Obviously, it's a C.J. Stroud, Will Anderson, Tank Dell type of love affair after the seasons that they had as rookies. It really got me thinking about all of Nick Caserio's draft classes, how things have progressed over the years. Like, we think about that first one that he had in 2021, where he only drafted like 5 or 6 guys. And it was just like, man.
The first one was a quarterback.
And the first one was a quarterback.
Which wasn't super popular with a lot of people. Yeah.
No, and none of us really thought, and this is not any disrespect to Davis, but none of us really thought that Davis Mills in the third round was going to be like the answer to their problems or like the future at quarterback. I think there was a brief period where people allowed themselves to at least entertain it. But it just felt like a very hopeless time back then.
The whole debate over Davis Mills amongst the fan base, or between us and the fan base, or us and each other and everything at that, at times, the very fact that it existed was depressing to me in some respects, because it was like, man, these are poor people problems, man. It's fun with your economic issues sometimes. It's like there's good money problems to have, where you're trying to decide between which nice car you're going to buy or anything. And then there's like, man, do I use my credit card to pay the power bill? I know I shouldn't do it, but I am. That's what it felt like. It felt like I was taking out a cash advance on my credit card when we were having the Davis Mills discussion.
Seth, that 2022 season, so his second season where he was the, let's just call it, for lack of a better term, the anointed starter for the year, 2022, his second year. I remember the conversation of, hey, can Davis Mills be good enough to keep you from having to draft a quarterback high the next year, the following year, which would turn out to be 2023 when they drafted C.J. Stroud. And even at the time, I thought, well, that's patently ridiculous. What do you mean, can he be good enough for you not to draft a quarterback if you're in a position to draft one high? Why would you not do that? You absolutely should do that. It turns out he wasn't, and they did. You know, like, he wasn't good enough for them to not draft a quarterback high, and they did draft one high, and all of that worked out. But even at the time, I thought, well, you got to be kidding me. You got to be.
I'll tell you.
We cannot have arrived here.
It's tough, though, too, because I do think, man, with quarterbacks, you can never go back and run the experiments to figure out, okay, like, how would this guy have fared if he didn't have to start right away? How would he have fared if he went to a good team? And I always really, with quarterbacks especially, I feel like You know, when you're at the age of 22, 23, 24 years old, your prefrontal cortex is, that's when it's like really putting the final touches on a lot of your brain development. And I look at guys like David Carr, and I just wonder what would have happened if he had gone back into a different environment.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. No, he's a tremendous what if.
Right, like what, and you just never know. You can't, that's why in the arguments over whether a guy should sit or whether you should start immediately, there's just no way to run the experiment. You know, you can't go back in time and take that same guy. But I, like, whatever it was, to, you know, to give Davis Mills some excuses, it certainly wasn't the ideal situation for it to get the best out of or see what a guy could or could not do.
Yeah, well, I think it ultimately worked out because, and this is just my opinion here, but I always thought that his ceiling was backup quarterback. Like, I thought all along that he could make a fine career for himself as more than likely a backup quarterback or someone who can start for you if he must, which is essentially what a backup quarterback is. Mm-hmm. And so I always thought that the benefit of it all, I think both for Davis and for the team, the benefit for Davis obviously is that he got a chance to play. He got the opportunity and he got the chance to play. For the team, you got a guy some experience who ultimately did become your backup quarterback. Now, I think last year them going to Case instead of Davis hurts a little bit of this argument because it's like, okay, well, how much confidence did they really have in his experience really if they didn't feel comfortable going to it when they had the opportunity to do so?
Yeah.
But Case is gone, obviously, with his injury, and Davis is the only quarterback on the roster. We'll see what else they do there. But it does feel like he is legitimately their backup quarterback this year, and I feel comfortable with him in that role. If you tell me Davis has got to play because something happened to CJ, I do feel good about the fact that he's got some experience, got a lot of starts under his belt from that time when it seemed like the Texans were just like running in place and running in place in last place.
Yeah.
Right. But that experience, I think, has shown itself, at least to me, to be valuable in the role that he feels now.
I think especially, and this is the key, and it's still a big question mark, is with a good rushing attack. If they have a good rushing attack, I trust Bobby Slowick that you can, especially with a new quarterback with a few wrinkles thrown in, this offense is already really good at getting guys wide open. They do a really good job of putting defenses in binds at times. So if the quarterback knows what he's doing, he can see and know where the wide open opportunities are going to be. So if you've got a good rushing attack, Davis, if they've got a good rushing attack, I feel comfortable that Davis can step in and be the guy that just, you know, game manages his way to a victory. Can you win? The old standard is, can you win half the games you play when your quarterback is out, when your starting quarterback is out? I feel a lot more comfortable with him this year and just actually executing the offense. The thing that probably holds him down most at this point is that I just don't trust the consistency of his accuracy. He has so many balls kind of sail on him at times, and I don't know, maybe that'll get better over time, but it's usually not. The quarterback who improves his accuracy dramatically is the exception, not the rule still in the NFL. But as a backup quarterback, I feel completely fine with him.
All right, so that covers Davis Mills. Nico Collins and Brevin Jordan are the players from that draft class, the 2021 draft class, and that's what we're doing in case you guys just joined us. Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. We're talking about expectations for Nick Caserio draft classes covering 2021 right now. Nico Collins just got a new contract. It's obviously like feels like a star in the making. The contract says so. The play last year says so. Brevin Jordan, a little bit different circumstance, more of a depth piece and a very specific player at tight end, but also I think an exciting player, an exciting weapon or tool for Bobby Slowick to use within this offense. Got expectations for these guys and Nico Collins and Brevin Jordan in what is now year four for these guys.
Yeah, and I think with Nico's another interesting one where looking at it now in hindsight, it's you can say and give Caserio credit for in that year when you're drafting a lot of guys that were underdeveloped because of the COVID year, and Nico is one of them. He sat out the COVID year, where you just don't quite know where a guy is developmentally. I think it was the same thinking with Davis Mills. There were some GMs that year that you could see shied away from the uncertainty, And then there were other GMs that said, you know what? There's an opportunity here that we'll take a swing on some guys that might be underdeveloped, like Davis Mills. And, you know, it didn't work out with Davis Mills, but it was a third rounder for a quarterback. But Nico Collins also underdeveloped, unknown upside, but the physical traits are all there. And then he gets banged up and injured, and he's playing in a bad circumstance his first 2 years. I think that was a gamble or a risk that paid off. Because I remember, you know, when I tried to play this experiment with a lot of different players. Like, okay, if I'm going out to practice, and if you told me that this guy was a first-round pick, would I have thought, like, wow, they spent a first-round pick on him? And I never felt with Nico, like, if I looked at him and I watched him at practice, would I have thought, and I didn't know anything at all about the Texans, would I have done a double take if somebody told me he was a first-round pick? And the answer was always no. He's a big, strong dude who's pretty. He's not Andre Johnson fast, but he's pretty damn fast.
Yeah, he can run, yeah.
Yeah, and I think last year he played a lot like a guy that, like, oh, yeah, it totally would have made sense if you had drafted him in the first round.
Yeah, I love the fact. I mean, he runs. You're right. He's not Andre Johnson fast, but he can get going. Like, he's plenty fast, and I think he's a little bit faster now than he was when he first got here. I think that's got to do with some of the adjustments he's made in his regimen, how he takes care of his body a little bit more, a little bit better.
Yeah,
I think CJ having a more accurate, and this is no disrespect to Davis Mills, but having an accurate quarterback as CJ Stroud, I think has complemented his skills a lot more. And I think that's why you saw the Nico Collins that you saw last year and why the expectations should be very high for him this year.
I think, too, that it's the combination of being a big, fast guy, but who can also put the brakes on real fast.
And
I think that's one part of Nico's game that I think may have improved in his route running this year. Mm. On some of these stops, he's like, because we saw it in practice a bunch where he gets down, he sits down in a chair the way, like, he can't do it as well as Stephon Diggs, a smaller guy, but for a big guy, he can put on the brakes real quick. And we saw in the preseason game when he had that play on the right sideline. He's very, very good at that. So it's enough. He's fast enough that combo of his ability to do the stuff underneath is really lethal.
Yeah, so I will set a fairly reasonable expectation for Nico Collins here just based on his physical traits alone, his physical traits and the season that he had alone.
Yeah.
Break a bunch of tackles. Give me that yak. The yak yards.
He led the league in broken tackles after the catch last year.
Yeah.
And you saw it, man, in crunch. It showed up big in crunch time at the end of the season and then on to the playoffs. Remember that Indy game? The thing I was most excited about that Indy game was the way Nico Collins and Dalton Schultz both, aside from Dalton Schultz's drop that he had early over in the, for a 2 week period, he had like a drop early in the game.
Yeah.
But both those guys were trucking dudes on the sideline. And it was just, it looked like what you want to see in terms of, man, okay, that's playoff football. Or, because that Colts game was basically a playoff game too. Like, that's a team that's got guys that are really just reaching down deep to go above and beyond in a critical situation.
So Brevin Jordan is one where, and I wanted to talk to you about this as well, the tight end group, and we can get into the group as a whole a little bit later. But Brevin Jordan specifically is one that I feel like the way they want to use him and his very, like, specific traits and capabilities, for whatever reason, I feel like we're underrating this group. Like, yeah. I think that Dalton Schultz is a legitimate high-level tight end, but as far as depth goes, I think we're underrating the group because of how specific of a player Brevin Jordan is, for one, and then the fact that Cade Stover is A, rookie, and B, a rookie that is relatively new to the position that he plays.
Yeah.
But between the two of them, I actually like their upside and the depth that they provide behind, not just the depth, but also their ability to work in tandem with, specifically Cade Stover, the ability to work in tandem with each other, or specifically Dalton Schultz. Like, I think it's an underrated group.
I think with Brevin Jordan, there's that, you know, new age combo tight end where he's not Evan Engram level of athleticism, but he, okay, He's kind of a, he's somewhere between a tight end and a slot receiver. And you can use him and find the pockets in the defense, especially when those defenses are trying to account for three really good starting wide receivers. Where we saw in the preseason, it's almost like CJ's check down in a lot of ways isn't a running back out in the flats or over the middle. It's a tight end, right? It's a tight end running over the middle.
Yeah.
You're through the middle. It's a guy that's actually full speed on a route. That's the check down in this offense in a lot of ways. And what you need in that is, first and foremost, guys who are dependable and are on the same page as the quarterback. I think Brevin's gotten to that level. Like, Brevin, it's been a long road for Brevin. It feels like for the last 3 years going into 2023, we always felt like, well, this might be the year where Brevin Jordan really needs to, like, yeah, he better show something this year or he might not be on the squad next year. I think last year in the second half of the season, you started to see, okay, boy, he's clicking in this offense.
Yeah, I wonder, though, how much I credit that to the acquisition, them signing Dalton Schultz, and then that working out for them to sign him again. You know, like,
yeah,
the, like when Brevin Jordan is drafted, and for the first couple of years of his career, the Texans don't really have real answers at tight end. Like,
right.
like the Texans don't really have, you know, it was an issue of how they had addressed that position or how that position had panned out. You know, the Pharaoh Browns, the Jordans that they had gone through, like they had guys, but they didn't really have, you know, a bona fide, like a tight end that you would want to pay, which is what Dalton Schultz turned into be, right? So the fact that he gets to kind of play in the background of that and that he gets to be more so of that check down role, that, you know, halfback, hybrid, tight end, fullback, you know, just a weapon, so to speak,
yeah.
Just a tweener of sorts. Like, I honestly don't know what he is. I know he's technically a tight end, but I don't know what the hell he really is. He's just a dude out there that can go out there and make plays if you put him in the right situations.
Well, he's the guy that you hope for, and that when you talk about versatility, usually, man, more times than not, it feels like the guy who's versatile is just a guy that a coach really wants to be versatile, but he genuinely isn't. I think when you look at Brevin Jordan and his versatility, some of that goes back to, yeah, him being around Dalton Schultz is really good, because there's so many times this year where Dalton Schultz got a reception where he wasn't even in the concept of that play. It was something that CJ sees that the coverages have rotated, that there's a blitz on, and he's got a three-man route combo over here to the left, but he knows that Dalton Schultz is working his guy on the other side of the field a certain way based on the coverage, and he goes to Dalton Schultz when that's not even really drawn up in the play. That's the kind of stuff that, like, you can't account for that as a defense. You can't draw it up with most quarterbacks and hope that you get it. But I think Brevin Jordan, in seeing that kind of relationship that CJ has with Dalton, it sets the bar really high for what the expectations are out of your tight end.
So I'm really fascinated by the class of 2022. I've been on different shows talking about this. I think it is, I don't want to overstate it, because obviously CJ Stroud is on this team. Will Anderson is on this team. They brought in a bunch of new guys that are much more famous than the majority of these guys that I'm about to mention in the class of 2022. But I am still individually fascinated by the class of 2022, and I feel like all of them, to varying degrees, having something to prove, or at least wanting to capitalize off of momentum that they established last year, in the case of, say, a Christian Harris or Derek Stingley Jr. But yeah, other guys like Kenyon Green, Jalen Petrie, John Mechie, Damian Pierce, like, these are guys who all have something to prove. And I, for one, am fascinated by the class of 2022. And to be honest with you, am not entirely sure of what type of expectation to place on any of them, except for maybe Derek Stingley.
Right.
And Christian Harris whenever the hell he comes back.
And there's still question marks with Derek Stingley about whether he can stay healthy for a whole season.
Correct.
It's interesting for a group that I think it's rare that you get into the third year of development and that you've got this many guys in a draft class that might really, really, really work out, but you're not sure about it. They've had rocky paths. And Derek Stingley, it's been because of injury. Kenyon Green, because of injury, as well as just not having played last year at all. I think of all those guys, the one that I'm most optimistic about, really just turning back into the best version of him from 2022. And I wouldn't, like, because Christian Harris didn't look that good in 2022. So I wouldn't put him in that category. Is Jalen Petrie. I mean, it's just that was the guy that, what, oh boy, and Damian Pierce. But I think Jalen Petrie right now has shown the most that, okay, I think he's going to be back to being somebody you feel really good about in 2024. With Damian Pierce, he still has that potential to reclaim what he was in 2022. I need to see it during tackle football. I need to see it in more than just practice. I need to see it in tackle football.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So we talked a little bit about Jalen Petrie yesterday, but let's do this since we're on this topic. What is it about Jalen Petrie and perhaps what they've got him doing that has you optimistic? Because you did just say getting as close to their 2022 form. And I do want to point this out before you answer this, that all of them at various points, except maybe you could say Kenyon Green and John Metchie, maybe to the least degree. But I think all of them at various points over the last 3 years, 3 seasons, we're going into year 3 here, all of them at various points have given you something to be encouraged about. Something to be encouraged about. Again, Kenyon Green probably the least amount, but I would say this year, the fact that he's not even a topic or a storyline is a good sign for him. All of them have given you something to be optimistic about, but why Jalen Petrie for you? Do you feel best about him returning to form?
Okay, so with Jalen Petrie, it's interesting because I felt like some of the issues for him playing safety as a pure safety, it was as much about psychology as it was anything else. He's a really bright kid, so it wasn't like he couldn't pick up the concepts or anything. It's that sometimes, man, some guys are just not wired to be safeties because they've got almost, they've got too much aggression in them. You know, like they just, I feel like Petrie is a guy that needs to be up around the line of scrimmage more often than not. And it's like if you had a young pitcher that you all of a sudden said, like, hey, you're not allowed to throw your fastball. Okay. And like, how much is that going to mess him up if he never gets to throw his fastball? Aside from the stupidity of it as a pitching coach, obviously, but it's gonna change things. And there were times last year where his over aggressiveness got to him, and I think also, you know, he was trying to make the right decisions, but he's just skewed a little bit more towards the aggressive side of things. So him being in a role where there's times where you give him enough of a dose of being aggressive. And because you're putting more on his table, And Matt Burke, the defense coordinator, talked about this a little bit. There's some guys that it's counterintuitive, but the more you put on their table, it kind of settles them down a little bit, and it can and it's a good chance. You know what it is? You know what it is, Brandon? It's like a gifted kid in a you take an intellectually gifted kid and you put him in the normal class. And sometimes those kids end up getting they become behavioral issues because they're bored.
Yeah.
I feel like Petrie in some ways is a kid that needs to be challenged, and in challenging him and having all of those extra challenges, it kind of settles him down a little bit, and he keeps from getting bored sitting back 30 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
I don't know exactly how things are going to work out. I'm obviously rooting for Jalen Petrie, man. We're from similar part of town. And look, Jalen Petrie's a stand-up dude. I am pro Jalen Petrie. As far as how he plays and how his, you know, season goes, I'm gonna trust D'Amico Ryans. And this Texans coaching staff, the defensive coaches that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio have chosen to surround themselves with, and to trust him to figure out how to get the most out of Jalen Petrie. After recognizing that whatever it was they were doing last year, having them play safety and kind of to the points that you were just making, that wasn't working, that mm-hmm. wasn't the way to get the most out of them, and that hopefully this is, and if because there's a good football player in there somewhere, he's kind of a tweener in the way that Brevin Jordan is, you know, just on the other side of the ball. I think maybe a slightly higher level player or more potential there for what he does.
Yeah.
But still, like, oh, man, is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? Is he a slot corner? I don't know what the hell he is, but we need to put him on the football field. We need to have him more than likely closer to the line of scrimmage, and we probably need to allow him to not think too much but also use his intellect in the same way, if that makes
sense. Right, right. Yeah, no, exactly. I'll tell you what. This is the other thing, because there's a side of Jalen Petrie that, man, like, same thing with Will Anderson. And Matt Burke has talked about this. I'm growing increasingly interested in Matt Burke's press conferences and everything, because I think he understands the human side of things really well.
Yes.
With Will Anderson, he's just so go, 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 go all the time. Sometimes with pass rushers especially, you got to teach them how to slow the game down a little bit. You got to teach them how to just kind of let it come to you that yours. There's a part of the really artful pass rushers where, yes, it's good to have a plan, but a lot of times when you're hitting your second or your third counter, that's all improv, you know, and you got to kind of slow it down a little bit and be like the martial artist. You got to be like in the Matrix where you're just kind of things are just happening automatically. And I think they've worked on that with Will Anderson. I think Jalen Petrie is a little bit the same way. He's so hyper-aggressive that sometimes he's his own worst enemy. The thing that I saw that really encouraged me, and I got into a long discussion with one of our listeners about this, who was telling me to slow down on my Jalen Petrie excitement because it's just the preseason. The thing that I got excited about with Jalen Petrie's plays in that Giants game especially, where he had obviously the interception but also another couple good plays, is that you can see his tackling has improved. He as many tackles as he had his rookie year, he also was one of the league leaders in missed tackles. And part of that is just sometimes coming in like a missile blindly and just trying to fire into people. I saw him multiple times in that game, including the tackle in the backfield, where you'd think, like, oh, no big deal, right? He was unblocked as a blitzer. He settled down, and he got his arms out wide, and he wrapped up. In the play out in the flats, where he lassoed the ball carrier, he settled down. He broke down before the tackle. He got his arms out wide. He secured the tackle. And only after he secured the tackle and was driving the ball carrier out of bounds did he start going for the ball with his right hand. Like, that's stuff that transfers over and you can see that he's been working on. I got really excited about his improved fundamentals.
So you make me less nervous about Jalen Petrie. And again, I'm rooting for him. I got confidence in him.
Real quick.
What?
Real quick on this draft class, the Kenyon Green, I like, we've talked about how much better his physique is and everything now.
Yep.
When I went back yesterday and watched that Damian Pierce cut up of all of his touches in 2022,
yeah,
it was glaring very early in this reel, where there was a shot right after the play of Damian standing next to Kenyon Green, and I didn't know who it was. It's like this. It's a sloppy pear-shaped dude with saddlebags and everything.
Oh, I remember.
I'm like, who is that?
Oh man, I was at all those practices,
crap,
dude.
It's Kenyon Green.
I remember, like, yeah. it was an odd thing, and I called it baby fat. I remember being at one practice. I want to say it was his rookie year, and we're there with all the offensive linemen are on the sideline, and man, they just look like they're, you know, hefty dudes, but they just look like hams, man. You can tell that they work out. These are professional athletes. Do not call them fat guys. They got some fat on them, but these are not fat guys. These are athletes, okay?
They're athletes where they have an extra layer of fat because it's their job requirement.
Oh, man. Justin McCray was on this team still. You could see it in his legs. Obviously, Laramie Tunsil, Titus Howard, all of these guys. And then there was Kenyon Green, who was just as tall as these guys, just as overall as large as these guys. But the physique was nowhere near the same. Like, it was top heavy, and then it was almost like he had bird legs at the same time. Like,
he was not the same. He looked like a 13-year-old with a pituitary disorder. He was this large teenager. And you know when it was, Brandon? It was when it's the one practice every year where the media is allowed to watch from the stands in NRG, and it's more of a walkthrough.
They had
it this year, too. Yep. I think I was sitting next to you. I think we both noticed it because we were kind of like, because Kenyon was just in his street clothes. He had a concussion at the time, and it was a different context than seeing them just all out there together, but him more in just normal workout clothes, that it was glaring. And it was really, like, you could see in his face and everything. He was an adolescent. And now he looks like a full-grown man.
Yeah.
Now he looks like somebody that he might show up to pick up your daughter for a date, and you're kind of like, well, I'm not going to threaten this dude.
Yeah, no.
I'm just going to be very polite to him and hope that he's a good dude. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Well, I don't know if my shotgun's going to do a damn thing to intimidate this guy.
I know that that's the only chance that I got, though. Is that damn shotgun. It's the shotgun or nothing. Because talking about fighting, probably not trying to fight Kenyon Green these days. You know, like it seems like he's had a lot more commitment to the weight room and getting his body right. I'll say this about him. I think the fact that he was such a talking point around here going into the offseason and into the training camp and preseason. Like, what are they going to do at left guard? Do they have an interior offensive line that's worth a damn and all of this kind of thing? What's Kenyon Green? And the fact that he went out there, training camp, preseason, did his job, and, like, we're not going to just be sitting up here talking about a left guard who's doing his job. Left guard does his job, then thank God the left guard's doing his job, and we're going to move the hell on. But that is a good thing. That is a positive thing for the Texans, that Kenyon Green is not a talking point. He just is doing his job. You just place him there and kind of hope for the best from there. I would also say, let me ask you this. Can you make me feel better about the Texans being without Christian Harris for an extended amount of time? Because I don't feel great about it. I don't necessarily hate the linebacker situation, but I love it a lot more when Christian Harris factors into it. When he doesn't, it does make me nervous. And the fact that he won't for the first few weeks of the season gives me a little bit of trepidation.
I think this is one thing, too, that it helps. That now I'm starting to get ready for the Colts a little bit and thinking about the problems and the issues that they presented last year, especially in the run game. Jonathan Taylor had 188 yards rushing. That includes when he was banged up at the end of the game in the fourth quarter. That I went back and I watched some of that game, and in a lot of ways, realistically, yes, it's in terms of just being a good defense or a competent defense. Last year, one of the big issues was that the linebackers were just biting on play action way too hard and way too consistently. In that game, they had to find a balance between, all right, remember early on in that Colts game, they were getting destroyed over the middle in the passing game with some of the short yardage stuff. Pittman had a few catches early on for like 10 yards. And I think one of the reasons that Jonathan Taylor got 188 yards rushing is that the Texans made a good adjustment on keeping their linebackers back off the ball. But if you'll remember, dig back in your memory banks, Azeez Alshire wasn't on that team. And So when it comes to being at least a good defense and on a winning football team that's playing playoff caliber football, Alshire right now is still better than any of the linebackers who were on the field that day. So it's not like it's the end of the world and you lost Christian Harris for a few weeks, so all is lost. I think it's a matter of, for me, it's more that, man, I think if they want to be a genuinely elite defense, they got to have Danico Autry and or Christian Harris out there at some point this season. But it's not like they can't be a good defense without him out there. So, because Alshire is that good. Alshire, when it comes to the mental side of the game, just has more experience. He's more dialed in. He is sideline to sideline in the way that Christian Harris was. So, you know, Alshire's upside probably isn't as high as Christian Harris's is, but he's still really, really good. And then otherwise, other than Denzel Perryman, it's basically the same cast of characters at linebacker, except they all have an extra year in the system. So I'm not overly distraught about it, but I also really, really would love to see what this defense looks like with both Alshire and Christian Harris out there.
I'll point out two more things about this draft class before we move on to the next one. Derek Stingley Jr. Well, first of all, let me say this. The class overall, looking at those names, you've got at least 3 to 4 starters, and then all of these guys from Derek Stingley Jr., Kenyon Green, Jalen Petrie, John Metchie, Christian Harris, Damian Pierce, all of these guys contribute, or like guys that are going to play for you, going to play some, I would say, more likely than not, some significant snaps for you. So I think that's a big deal. And then you've got at least 3 to 4 starters between Stingley, Green, Harris, and then Petrie, even though Harris is injured right now. But I want to point this out to you, Seth, because I noticed this, and I imagine John Lopez is going to mention it in the loop later on in the day. Derek Stingley Jr., out of his shell. He's out of his shell, man.
From the event last night?
Oh, yeah.
From the Texans premiere?
Let me tell you, shy Derek Stingley Jr. is gone. He's still, a naturally quiet dude.
Yeah.
But last night, much more talkative than I've been around him a lot. Much more talkative than I've ever seen him. Much more social than I've ever seen him. I mean, holding court at the table that he sat at, and we were just right next to him in a table right next to him.
Oh.
Like he is out of his shell.
That's good.
100%.
Well, you know what? And to set the table for you, I guess literally, because we're going to talk about sitting at a table. As a player, those events, when you're a young man, can be very, very awkward. This is what happens. They sit you down at a table full of people who have usually paid a good chunk of money to sit at the table, especially if they're sitting with Derek Stingley.
Yep.
And it's something that, you know, a lot of young men aren't accustomed to in that setting, especially it's a formal environment. I can remember being in it myself. Like, and being, I was probably horrible at it. I was just, it's kind of nerve wracking. Cause it's just a completely different environment than you've usually been exposed to as a young guy. And it's impressive. It's impressive for guys like that if they can hold court and if they can be everything that, you know, like people pay that to be. They want to get to know this guy and have some up close chatting time with him. That's actually more impressive than it might sound. It can be a very awkward situation.
Yeah, so I'm glad you made that point, because I can't speak to everybody. I didn't see everybody necessarily, but from where I sat, I can give you a few players that I thought were good at it.
Oh, okay, cool.
Derek Stingley Jr. is one.
Okay.
Mario Edwards is another.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me.
Mario, who I will point out, did not dress up for the occasion.
Oh, good for him, too. I like that. That's D-tackle stuff right there.
That's defensive tackle stuff.
Yeah.
Did not dress up for the occasion.
Mario Edwards, son of an NFL player.
Yes.
And I think probably the opposite. He's a son of a Cowboys player. So he spent time hobnobbing and whatnot.
Yeah.
But he's been in the league forever. So it doesn't surprise me there.
I'll give you one that might surprise you, but might not, from Notre Dame. Blake Fisher, the rookie.
Okay. Yeah.
Good at it. And another one was Robert Woods. All of these guys really good at holding court at their respective tables. I noticed it. Thought it was really cool. Hey, look, we'll get into some more of these draft classes. We went over 2021 and 2022. We'll do later on in the show, perhaps in the 9 o'clock hour, 2023 and 2024. But coming up next, I want to talk about this. Bobby Slowick, really, really respected in that building. I got a great appreciation for it being around last night. And also, what's something that you waited for that didn't feel like it was worth the wait? That's next on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Brandon Scott in for Sean Pendergast, rolling along with Seth Payne on a Friday. And I got to tell you, the Texans season premiere last night got me really to thinking ahead. It got me excited about this season. I had a stranger come up to me, Seth, and ask, just straight up. And I was actually kind of confused by the question, even though we've got all of this hype and energy around the Texans. But a stranger came up to me and just straight up asked, you ready to go to the bowl? You ready to go to the bowl?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, you're talking about the Super Bowl. We don't talk like that around here normally, but that's how we're talking these days. And I got to respect it. So, look, I am excited about the 2024 season. I understand the cliches and the value of it, of being where your feet are and living in the moment. I'm into all of that. But from just working the room a little bit and being around, it really got me thinking ahead. It got me really excited about Bobby Slowick, somebody who I already knew was well regarded and highly thought of, both in that building and I think the league showed based off of the interest that he generated over the offseason for head coaching jobs or at least interviews. I think the league showed that they have a lot of respect for him as well. But I grew some respect for him as well, or I would say on top of what I already had, based off of some of how the more respected people on that offense, specifically veterans who have played for other guys who have accomplished things in this league, who have won in this league, and the way that they talked about Bobby Slowick. Not saying that he's Matt LaFleur or Sean McVay necessarily, but that he's like that. He's of that. He has some of those traits. He seems to be of that ilk. It really got me thinking about Bobby this season, what he's got to prove. Some things he doesn't, right? He's kind of a known name now. But to us, I feel like there are still some things that he's got to prove, even with all of his accomplishments. Can he scheme up a run game? Can they establish it? Especially now that they've got Joe Mixon, a healthy offensive line. It's really got me thinking about Bobby in this season. And then also, because I'm certain, especially based off of these conversations and how things felt last night, I'm certain that that guy is gone after this year. It got me thinking about the next guy up, the guy after him, and sort of this pipeline. I do think that the Texans are creating a coaching pipeline of guys who not only I think can step up for Bobby Slowick or in Bobby Slowick's role if and when he leaves, but this is a coaching staff to pay attention to, because like some of these other Shanahan, Kubiak type of places, McVay type of places before that produced head coaches, I think D'Amico Ryans, who of course comes from the Shanahan coaching tree, I think D'Amico Ryans is establishing something very similar to that here in Houston, starting with Bobby Slowick.
Well, and it's, I think when it comes to hiring a defensive head coach, right, like people always bring up, and it's valid, I get it, I it doesn't worry me as much. But people always worry about, okay, well, what's going to happen with your young quarterback when your offensive coordinator leaves? And that's why I have always felt like, yes, that's a true thing to worry about. But you also got to remember, too, that you are hiring a head coach. And a lot of times, I think sometimes that people get too married to the idea of needing a good offensive coordinator that they end up hiring a guy who's not actually a good leader as a head coach. And it's all for naught, regardless of how good an offensive coordinator he is, because he can't create that culture. So when it comes to hiring a coach, first and foremost, hire the guy that you think is the best leader and has the best effect, the best potential of creating a good culture. Because then if you have a Mike Tomlin or you have a Pete Carroll or you have a Bill Belichick, that caliber and level of head coach, then I don't want to say the offensive coordinator becomes an afterthought, but it's a big deal. You know, it smooths over a lot of problems. And by the way, also try to have a Ben Roethlisberger or a Tom Brady. or I guess maybe a Russell Wilson. I don't know. but especially if you have a Roethlisberger or a Tom Brady, the offensive coordinator isn't an afterthought, but you can work with different offensive coordinators and be just a-okay, especially if one of them goes off and sucks as a head coach and comes back into the fold. So I think the fact that D'Amico is the real deal when it comes to all the leadership stuff, and it's everything that you would want when it comes to that, and because CJ has all the potential of being one of those quarterbacks that just is, I don't want to say offensive coordinator proof, but can work with multiple different offensive coordinators, it's not as much of a thought or an issue for me. I think that they've got a succession plan in place already, just in terms of just always having guys that you know. As soon as Bobby Slowick started taking interviews, I'm guessing that D'Amico started looking at his list of, okay, what are we going to do? And, you know, based on the timing of it, who's out there? Who do we like on the roster in case we have to replace him?
I didn't get as enough thought going into the preseason, or really going into any of the preseason games, maybe until the last one. But in your experience, Seth, how common is it for assistant coaches to get play call and tryouts in the preseason? It seems like a thing that maybe is happening. I don't know if it's happening more. I honestly can't say.
Right. Well, I think different coaches do it differently, so it's not incredibly uncommon. I think these days, I think they do it more because people, especially because they just don't, so many coaches just don't take the preseason games as seriously as they used to. But especially, this is another thing that I'm glad that D'Amico had his time in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. Because Kyle Shanahan, much more so than a lot of other head coaches, takes it upon himself to help groom these guys to be head coaches. And part of it is that, and giving them responsibilities above and beyond what their current job role is, prepping them for how to handle press conference, all of that. And it's cool to see the way that Shanahan operates. Because you do that, yeah, you're going to lose some guys and they're going to go off and some of them are going to be competition for you, but it puts you in a really good position to attract new good coaching talent. Guys look at San Francisco as a place to go that, man, all right, this is where I want to be. I'm going to get resources to help me become a head coach someday. And you just keep creating a pipeline that way. And I think that in the short term, the Texans are the beneficiary of that because Bobby Slowick has had that training both with Kyle Shanahan and now with D'Amico. But I think it also creates an environment where other offensive coordinators are going to be, you know, very eager to get a chance in the Texans organization, or other receivers coaches or other quarterback coaches. Yeah, I think you've got a big pool of people that are eager to come to your organization.
I've got a request for Bobby Slowick. You tell me if it's a reasonable one. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but this is my Bobby Slowick request that he leave us with or provide us with before he leaves. Scheme us up a good running game here in Houston.
Right.
I know that there are, you tell me if you think these are, how legitimate of excuses you think these are, if it's just circumstance or what, but I understand that the offensive line was decimated by injuries last year. I understand that Damian Pierce, as you're going into the season, your lead back, didn't turn out to necessarily be the best fit for what they were trying to do. I understand that the offensive line coach was also new to the scheme and to the system. And that's on top of the fact that as much as we like D'Amico Ryans, even the head coach himself was in his first year. There was a lot of newness to last year that honestly made their success even more impressive and noteworthy. But I thought it also contributed to some of the issues, along with the injuries that I mentioned, to the issues that they had in the run game. But I would like, before Bobby Slowick chunks up the deuces, they say, or gets up out of here, to scheme up a run game, especially now that you got Joe Mixon, you're in year two of C.J. Stroud. It feels like, it's not like you can say, hey, this window is forever. It doesn't work that way in the NFL. Dynasties are rare. So, like, you got this year, got you back, by surprise, by the way, because everybody thought you were gone. Scheme us up a run game before you get up out of here.
I think that, all right, if I'm going to take the most optimistic view of it, there's two things. One is that last year, Bobby Slowick was working with a rookie quarterback, teaching him the scheme. The passing game evolved as the year went along. And because CJ was so freakishly smart about it, he ended up being way ahead of the curve by rookie quarterback standards by the end of the year. Just light years ahead of the curve. He's a smarter quarterback than almost every third or fourth year quarterback out there right now. The way he operates, he's just flat out smarter than them. And I think in that regard, hopefully it allows Bobby Slowick to be more focused on and more dialed into the finer aspects of the run game. So there's that. The second part of it is that Joe Mixon's just a better running back than they had on the roster last year. And in the NFL, it's more often that a running back makes the offensive line look good than vice versa. It can work both ways. You know, if you've got a slam dunk 1990s level of Cowboys offensive line out there, you can make non-Emmitt Smith type guys look pretty good with an offensive line like that. But more often, if you got a really good and solid running back, he covers up for some of the offensive line miscues, and I think Joe Mixon is that type of guy. You look at last year, the difference between Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce was that Devin Singletary wasn't getting great blocking, but he was just a lot better at dealing with bad blocking than Damian Pierce was. So at the very least, it's going to be a better rushing attack as long as Joe Mixon is healthy. And then also, I think Joe Mixon, having played in a very similar scheme to this, he can be helpful to the offensive line too, because there's a lot of communication that goes back and forth between the running back and the offensive lineman. You know, how it's supposed to look, especially on the zone runs. Like, what picture are you giving the offense? What picture is the offensive line giving the running back when he's making his reads? I think Joe Mixon's a really good resource in that regard. So I'm cautiously optimistic that it's going to be a better rushing attack. Again, though, I think the standard for me on both the offense and defensive side of the ball is you've got the potential to be elite. So it's not enough just to be better. They got to be a really good rushing attack. That's the huge unknown right now.
713-572-4610. That's the number to text to interact with the show. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, I want to know something that you waited for a long time that did not feel like it was worth the wait. I've got an answer, and Seth Payne is actually tangentially related to my answer. Oh. I want to hear from the audience and hear what you guys got. 713-572-4610 is how you get in. Also, in the 8 o'clock hour, we'll talk about this next. The Astros, how comfortable are you with the pitching staff?
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.